Well, the Senate Banking Committee holds a hearing later today on the foreclosure crisis as a new watchdog report warns that flawed foreclosure documents could threaten major banks with billions of dollars in losses and hurt the government's efforts to keep people in their homes. Employees or contractors of several major banks have testified in court cases that they robo-signed and in some cases backdated thousands of certifying documents for home seizures. Why would they do that? Well, the banks say they want to get the debt off their books and sell the houses again with clean paperwork. And some say, after all, what's the problem with paperwork when these are people not paying their bills? But reporter Matt Taibbi says it's all a part of the Wall Street scam that bundled subprime mortgages and sold them to investors in the guise of AAA-rated no-risk investments, and they now want to get rid of the paper trail of what should be a crime. Matt has a new piece in Rolling Stone headlined Invasion of the Home Snatchers, and it focuses on a special super high-speed housing court in Jacksonville, Florida. It's basically rubber-stamping legally dicey foreclosures. He's also written a new book about the financial crisis, Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and the Long Con That's Breaking America. We'll get to that. But Matt, as you join us in the studio, your reaction to this new report, I'm sure you're not shocked to find gambling in foreclosures.
Yeah, I'm shocked. No, I mean, I'm not surprised at all. I was in a court in Jacksonville, and literally every single foreclosure case that I saw had fraudulent or doctored paperwork in it. This is something that was epidemic in this entire era of securitized mortgages. And basically every mortgage that was securitized, which is probably 90-95% of them, has no legal paper trail to it. Right. So there's going to be an enormous mess in sorting all this out.
Tell us more about some of the things you saw. These were courts, they're called the Rocket Docket by everybody there, presided over by retired judges that were pulled out of retirement. You had lawyers for the banks, the plaintiffs, sometimes, occasionally a lawyer for the homeowner.
Right.
Just what were some of the things you saw in the paperwork? I'm thinking of one foreclosure where the bank claimed to have bought the mortgage from another bank, which if you looked at it closely, you realize the other bank failed 2 years earlier.
Right, yeah, there was that. And that case I saw in one woman's pro se defendant. But to me, the one that was more striking was the one where the bank claimed in the same document that it was both the owner and holder of the note and had lost and was unable to locate the note. And they said that in literally the same page and one paragraph after another. And this is not uncommon. This is actually relatively typical. You'll see banks with foreclosure documents where they say, well, we obtained the note on X date, but we actually foreclosed in the house 6 months before that. So, it's a complete and total mess. They're all essentially just making up the paperwork because they never kept the paperwork.
Well, which is part of, sort of making things up as you go along has been the key to the whole financial crisis. But what about that claim that we hear it from bankers? We hear it from people on the street. Hey, these are people who weren't paying, so what does it matter if the paperwork's not there?
Okay, there's a number of things wrong with that argument. Number one, it's not necessarily true. A lot of the people that I ran into down in Florida actually were current in their payments. One thing that's extremely common, and again, this whole lack of paperwork speaks to this completely chaotic, anarchistic situation in the entire banking industry where one arm of the industry doesn't know what the other is doing. You'll have a situation where a person will be offered mediation and will have a lowered payment, will be making those payments, and will get foreclosed upon at the same time.
Because it's a computer glitch or something?
Because there are two different ways that the banks keep records. One involves human beings and one involves computers. Sometimes they'll actually tell a person, in order to qualify for modification, you have to be delinquent. So stop paying your payments for 3 months, and then we'll talk. And so they do that, and then legally, 90 days plus one, they can foreclose on the person.
Right. And there's no way of telling the computer, wait a minute, there's nothing that's noted on the computer. Wait, I was told not to pay so that I could be modified.
Right. There's two things. There's one thing that's called a contact history that involves human beings, and another thing that's called a number history. And the number history just records your payment history. And once your payment is delinquent, that they fire off one letter to the foreclosure department and another letter to the credit bureaus, and that's it.
Well, but why, for instance, in your book you give an example of a complete scam artist here in Boston who befriended a homeowner who was very smart, very informed. He thought he was clear that he bought a fixed rate mortgage. Mm-hmm. The interest would not go up. suddenly he's getting the higher interest rates because somewhere along the line, the scam artist had actually sold him an adjusted rate mortgage.
Because he got a higher commission. Yeah.
Right, because, of course, all that you get the higher interest and the higher fees up front, you know, and that's why the banks were selling so many of these and their attendant scam artists selling them for them. But this homeowner is still in his home because here in Massachusetts, where this happened, the Attorney General Martha Coakley investigated mortgage companies. Ultimately, Goldman Sachs paid a $50 million fine,
right.
pittance, you know,
right.
compared to what they
Which
made.
Which is like 4 hours of their fixed income desk, but whatever.
But yeah. we know attorneys general are investigating a lot of these foreclosures. Why isn't this happening more often? Why is it more the case that you have these rocket dockets just pushing foreclosures through?
Well, because, you know, as I write in the story, everybody's talking about how this is, you know, the old phrase was too big to fail. This is too big for fraud, because if they start actually investigating all this stuff and they examine what the real value of all of these mortgage-backed securities is, and again, not only the banks have billions and billions of dollars worth of mortgage-backed securities on their books, so does the Federal Reserve, and so do you and I, the taxpayer. We all own this stuff, and it's actually worth probably 20 or 30 cents on the dollar. The banks are registering these assets at face value. They're worth a lot less. And if we start to dig into this, it's going to cause another financial crisis.
Right.
And that's what everybody's worried about.
Because you write that the law requires that banks buy back mortgages if they're found to have faulty or fraudulent paperwork.
Yeah, in some of these cases, most notably, you know, Bank of America is being sued right now for the pooling and servicing agreements wherein they put these mortgages together when they first bundled them. According to a lot of those agreements, the banks are actually technically obligated to buy back any loans that are in modification or in foreclosure, which is like, you know, most of them in a lot of cases, and in Countrywide's case especially. So these banks would be on the hook for billions and billions of dollars if they actually investigated this stuff.
What a mess. Matt Taibbi, contributing editor at Rolling Stone. His article about the foreclosure court in Florida appears in Rolling Stone. We'll link you to that. His new book is Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and the Long Con That's Breaking America. By the way, if you're in the Boston area here where we are, Matt will be at Brookline Booksmith tonight and tomorrow at Northeastern University. You can also go to hereandnow.org and find out more about that. But after a break, we want to find out about some of the conclusions in his book. Like, why does he think Alan Greenspan is the biggest... Oh, wait. I can't say that on the air. His thoughts on Alan Greenspan, on why Tea Partiers don't matter, even as we see them rack up victory after victory. More with Matt Taibbi in a minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide. On the web at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Matt Taibbi, contributing editor at Rolling Stone, who's been writing for years but decided when the financial crisis hit to take a good 7 months and really try to figure out what is going on. His new book is Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and the Long Con That Is Breaking America. And in that book, he reserves a special sort of scorn for Alan Greenspan, the former chair of the Federal Reserve, who admitted during the crisis that perhaps his Ayn Randian thinking of free markets, completely unregulated, unfettered free markets, was perhaps flawed. But suddenly there he was on Meet the Press last Sunday as an expert talking about the economy.
The big, serious problem is whether or not the outlook for the longer-term deficit spooks the bond market to a point where long-term interest rates and mortgage rates move up very sharply. If that happens, that will cause the double dip.
Matt Taibbi, now watch your language. But your thoughts about Alan Greenspan being brought out as a financial expert?
I mean, it's unbelievable that the fact that he's even being rehabilitated at this stage after everything that went on in the last 20 years, and that his solution to the problem is that we have to slash deficits and cut services to ordinary people, which is the implication of what he's talking about after, you know, $10-12 trillion bailout of Wall Street that he certainly had a hand in. It's just incredible.
Well, make your case further, because this goes back several decades. And I've talked to other investment bankers who have said, you know, we kind of felt this all along, that whereas Alan Greenspan was said to be this sort of uninterpretable guru, that perhaps he really wasn't making sense. So make your case that this goes back decades.
Yeah, if you actually look at Greenspan's, he has this incredible reputation as an economist and a prognosticator, but if you actually look back at his record, he was wrong about almost every prediction that he ever made.
Well,
in 1974, he said, you know, at the beginning of the year, he said, there has never been a time when you could be as unqualifiedly bullish as we are now, and the market immediately lost 40% of its value over the next year. He was wrong about the savings and loan crisis. He gave a hearty endorsement to Charles Keating. He was wrong about derivatives, and he said in 1994 that they're completely safe and won't need to be regulated. He said the internet stock bubble was a new paradigm, that these rising overinflated prices were no problem.
Even when there were many people, I mean, he almost didn't have to be an economist to know, wait a minute, pets.com so far looks like just a sock puppet.
Yeah, I mean,
there was nothing there.
You had guys who were literally writing ideas on the backs of napkins, and suddenly they're worth, you know, $1 billion in capitalization the next day. And he was saying, you know, it's no longer measuring how much these companies make. It's not about that kind of traditional value system, where the new value is in ideas. In other words, we don't have to be economists anymore. We don't have to measure this in dollars and cents. We can just sort of say it's a good idea, therefore it's worth a lot of money.
Well, you quote others, Fleckenstein, his first name would be, the biographer of Alan Greenspan, who said, you know, when after the tech bubble, Greenspan started talking about housing and mortgages
right, as
the new thing to bet on.
And not only that, he openly encouraged people to get out of fixed income, fixed rate mortgages and get into option ARM mortgages. He said that was a good bet for people. And the really, really... ARM mortgages. Yeah, the adjustable rate.
Right.
Yeah, and the really noxious thing about that is that he encouraged people to get into adjustable rate mortgages just before he himself started hiking mortgage rates. Interest rates. So in other words, he encouraged all these ordinary people to get adjustable rate mortgages, and then he slammed them and gave the banks a huge handout by jacking up interest rates on those people.
Well, and we've explored his Ayn Randian thinking. He was an acolyte of Ayn Rand, the unfettered free market advocate. But you tell us little things we didn't know. We did not know when Ayn Rand's one of her lovers left for someone else, that it was Alan Greenspan who actually signed the decree banning this young man.
Yeah, there was this Leninist excommunication, and he actually signed it, which was really amazing.
Really an interesting take. But the overarching message of your book is that actually none of it matters. Nothing matters. Politics doesn't matter. Presidential campaigns don't matter. Tea partiers don't matter. Because the fix is in that it's the banks and those who back the banks or big money are all that count. That while you're out chasing presidential candidates and things like the oil, the rise in gas, the commodities bubble were happening, you know, it's almost like Washington almost had nothing to do with anything. It's all the fix is already in.
The real problem is, and this was a sort of a moment of negative personal discovery for me since I was a campaign trail reporter, was finding out that on all the issues that I'm covering with the financial crisis and the financial services industry, there is virtually no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. In fact, if anything, the Democrats have been worse in the last 15 or 20 years. They have more or less the identical deregulatory agenda. Clinton pushed through most of the really destructive laws that led to this crisis.
But on the other hand, the Tea Partiers, who have now surfaced as those, you know, angriest at the Democrats, but also at big bailouts and things, you know, maybe they've even been co-opted.
Oh, absolutely they have. To me, the most striking thing about the Tea Party movement recently was the day after the elections a couple of weeks ago, the Republicans announced that one of the first things they were going to do was try to repeal the Volcker Rule, which was this law that was passed over the summer. And it was the Volcker Rule is specifically designed to prevent bailouts. It's a rule that says that federally insured banks can't engage in risky gambling behavior for their own accounts. In other words, they don't want Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase, who we insure, engaging in crazy gambling behavior, because then we're going to have to bail them out. The Volcker Rule is designed to prevent bailouts, but all this anti-bailout fervor elected the politicians who are trying to repeal this law. And that, to me, is what it's all about.
And it's a rule named after the last Federal Reserve chair that many people felt was truly independent of the banks and the politicians.
Right, Paul Volcker.
There is so much more in Rolling Stone reporter Matt Taibbi's new book. It's called Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and the Long Con That Is Breaking America. You know, if you've already read it, we'd love to know what you think. Go to hearandnow.org. We'd love to hear a comment from you. Is his view of the world that the fix is in, that nothing matters, is it too dark, or is he spot on? And Matt, we always appreciate your visits, even though you're depressing.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Latest news is next, Here and Now.